Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Casino City Gang, your podcast for all things gambling. It's Thursday, February 5th, 2015, and I am your host, Aaron Todd, and I'm coming to you live from Casino City's worldwide headquarters just outside of Boston. Joining me here in the broadcast booth today is Casino City Associate Editor Dan Podhizer. How are things going today, Dan?
Things are going pretty good. I'm exhausted from all this snow, but other than that, feeling good.
Yeah, we're right in the heart of the storm. If you've been following the news, you probably know that the Boston area has been just belted with snow. We got more snow in a one-week period than in the entire recorded history of the region. I think we got over 40 inches of snow in some places. The snowbanks are piled very high in my driveway, and we've got some snow coming down today. Not quite as much. I think we're going to get a few inches, but we might even get more coming on Monday. So who knows? Maybe we can get this up to 5 or 6 feet in a two-week period, and we'll I don't know what we're going to do with it all, but we'll figure it out eventually. Avoiding the snow is Vin Narayanan, and he will be absent today from the podcast. He is in London wrapping up the ICE Totally Gaming Convention, and also he was there for the London Affiliate Conference as well. And so we can look forward to having him joining us again next week. But we do have a great show for you today. We'll be discussing the recent ESPN The Magazine story, which details NBA Commissioner Adam Silver's view on sports betting. We've talked about that a little bit more, but this article, I thought, did a great job kind of giving an insider's view of kind of where he is and how he came to be there. We'll also be dissecting the 2015 World Series of Poker schedule, and we'll discuss Dan's recent experience playing a poker tournament on PokerStars home games. And, of course, we'll end the show as we always do, at least now that the football season is officially over, by making our best bets. But let's start with ESPN, the magazine story, Dan. We've known for quite a while that Adam Silver's philosophy on sports betting is a little different from that of most major sports commissioners. He wrote a op-ed, I guess it was, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, saying that it was time for federally regulated sports betting, not just in Nevada, but to make it, you know, a federally regulated industry. What were your takeaways from this article, you know, based on what you read and what you kind of already knew about Silver's stance?
I didn't feel like I learned anything different. I think that we've, you know, being in this industry and always being up on gambling-related topics, we were sort of among the first to take notice of, you know, Silver coming out and saying this. And a lot of people took notice, for sure. But I just I viewed this article as being a way to get it out to a more of a mainstream audience. That the idea that, well, the commissioner of the NBA is looking to basically have legal sports betting and really looking to monetize sports betting for the NBA, and he thinks that other sports leagues should do the same. However, what we've talked about in the past is the idea that Silver's really not really accomplishing anything by doing this, because he sort of knows that it's not going to happen anytime soon, but he also is doing it as a way to, as a cover for, like, deals with daily fantasy sports leagues. Here's my opinion, basically, is I believe that every commissioner and that most people involved with all the major sports, let's take out the NCAA because they're nuts, but with all the major sports, would absolutely love to have federally regulated sports betting, and they would love to have deals with sports books. It makes perfect sense. They don't believe that it actually has any impact on the games. They don't think that fixing is going to happen any more than it would on the black market. They're rational people, but what they're afraid of is the idea that the general public thinks that it would increase game fixing, right? It's the perception. So what I think is helpful about articles like these and what Silver is coming out and saying publicly is that there needs to be a shift in public perception. And this is a good way to get that started, when the commissioner of the NBA comes out and supports it.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that I took away that I thought was interesting was it kind of goes into how he came to end up here. And they talk about the Tim Donaghy scandal, obviously, the NBA referee who was fixing games because he was in a great deal of gambling debt. He was betting on games. He was losing. And as a result, he started calling a ton of fouls at the end of games to try to get things where he needed them to be. And, you know, the NBA had no idea. They were clueless that this had been happening. Their own monitoring systems had missed it. So that was obviously a huge black eye for the league and a huge eye-opener as well because, you know, it was going on right under their noses and they missed it. And then in addition, Silver was the deputy commissioner and he handled the league's international operations. So he was, when they were playing exhibition games in China or in Europe, you know, he was talking to people there that were involved in sport. And, you know, over there in the UK, there is regulated sports betting.
That's a natural form of fan engagement over there.
I mean, the soccer jerseys have sports books, you know, like on there. They're like NASCAR drivers. They have their sponsorships written right on their jerseys, which I think it would be hard to see. I think that would be unlikely to happen in the United States.
And it doesn't need
but,
that.
And it doesn't need to. But that's the point, is that we're worlds apart.
Right.
And, you know, he saw a system that works and that the NBA could profit from. And, you know, it would probably work a lot better than the system that they have right now. So I think that was an interesting sort of – getting that international understanding, I think, is key in sort of his evolution on the topic. But let's be clear, he doesn't want to see New Jersey, like, you know, he wrote this op-ed and then a week later the NBA had its lawyers in New Jersey courts opposing state regulated online or state regulated gambling, sports betting, from New Jersey. He wants a federal solution. He doesn't want 25 different states with 25 different sets of rules. Because that gets harder, right? I mean, that's obviously it's a lot harder to deal with than it is if you have a federal system where everybody can do it the same way and they can opt in or opt out. And I think that's what he would like to see. Coupled with this is the fact that John McCain is going to be holding a hearing on sports betting in the Senate, and he seems rather favorable to it. If you take out the online portion, he doesn't want any online betting on games. But, you know, this is a generational thing, and John McCain is not of a generation that does things online. Do you still don't think that there's going to be any movement on this? I would say, let's say in the next 5 years.
No. Movement in terms of, like, a tangible change, that we're going to see someone betting on games outside of Nevada? No. I think there could be a movement in terms of what the way people talk about it and the public perception. And I mean, I personally don't even understand this the public perception. Like, I think the public perception is in favor of sports betting. So,
well, it certainly was in New Jersey where they voted overwhelmingly to regulate
the industry.
New Jersey
is a liberal state. You know, I would expect them to be okay with that. But I don't know. Like, obviously, you know, I might have some confirmation bias, but I just can't imagine. I guess the Bible Belt is that really that strong, right, where the country would just be totally opposed to sports betting of any kind. Because I don't think people really think that legalized sports betting would affect the outcome of the games. Like, it goes
more
on
importantly, it's going to tear the fabric of our society, though, Dan.
Yeah. Well, so Haralbus Vulgaris, who the famous sports bettor and poker player, most notably famous for his NBA betting, he told a story on Twitter about how a few years ago he saw John McCain, in one of the Las Vegas sports books. Or maybe they were riding an elevator or something. They were in a casino. And they were talking about sports betting, and Bob Vulgaris was asking McCain about his views on sports betting. And McCain said the usual things like, well, we're worried about, you know, the impacts of, you know, fixing games, blah, 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 blah. And Vulgaris said, but it goes on in Nevada and everybody seems fine with that. And McCain just was completely silent. He had absolutely no answer for that. And it's completely oxymoronic, right, to to say that sports betting would ruin the fabric of society, it would compromise the leagues, but then have basically no issue with it going on legally in Nevada, right? Or maybe they do have an issue. I know they don't have an issue with it because I know they don't care, right?
Well, I mean, it's codified into law that you know, Nevada has this exception to the law.
If the leagues don't make any noise about it, it will go virtually, you know, under the radar.
Well, and there's no way it's ever going to get changed.
Exactly. So, I mean, it would be a beautiful system, right? Could you imagine people at games pulling out their smartphones at halftime and out on the Jumbotron, all right, fans, time to get your second half bets in. The line has moved. The 76ers are now -3.
Yeah.
It would be amazing.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is sportsbooks don't actually win at a rate nearly that. You know, casinos don't make that much money on sports betting. It's really a vehicle for the leagues to promote themselves. I mean, Nevada sportsbooks won $3.2 million this year on the Super Bowl on $116 million wagered. That's a pretty low margin.
Yeah, but Aaron, do you realize, though, that means that all those bets – were people who had to be in Nevada.
Oh, I know. But my point is just that the margins for sportsbooks are incredibly low.
It doesn't matter.
They're talking about the Super Bowl, which is the biggest bet on game of the year.
Uh-huh.
Nevada sportsbooks in the entire state made $3.2 million. Now, I'm not saying that's not a lot of money, because it is a decent amount of money, but it's not like a huge, huge sum.
But those margins... when you allow everybody to do it online.
Oh, I'm not arguing with you. I'm not arguing. But my point is that you know, for the casinos, it's an added revenue stream that they would love to have, obviously. But I think the public probably wants it in some ways more than the sports books do. I mean, the sports or the casinos certainly want it. But Nevada doesn't want to see this happen on a national scale because that takes away that's a huge tourist hit for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, March Madness, if you've got 30 states that have regulated sports betting, are the sports books in Nevada still going to be really busy? Yes, they are, but they're going to take a huge hit for tourism.
I mean, well, yeah, Vegas would still provide that all-inclusive experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be amazing just to see Sheldon Adelson come out against sports betting in the rest of the U.S. That would theoretically happen, right? It would compromise his business. You know, he wouldn't want sports betting all over the country, online or not online, because then people would stop coming to casinos. It would be immoral.
Meanwhile, he allows mobile betting
exactly
on sports within his casinos.
Exactly. So just getting back to the article real quick, I'm just going to reiterate that I think this is, while I view Silver as being somewhat hypocritical on this matter, I basically view everybody throughout the leagues as being hypocritical on this matter. Nobody really has the guts to stand up, do what's right, do what would make the owners a lot of money. I mean, Mark Cuban's coming out and saying, yeah, absolutely, we should have sports betting. We should be monetizing this as much as possible because we have so much leverage right now. And every single team owner wants sports betting. Everybody wants it. I don't understand this view of the perception, because I just don't buy it.
The one thing that I think is interesting, there was one sentence in this story that I found extremely interesting. They tried to get in touch with some different league executives to hear, you know, just to at least even get a statement from the other leagues about what they felt, you know, what their stance was on sports betting. Here's a sentence. Major League Baseball declined to comment for this story. Okay, whatever, that's not a big deal. And then it says, and the NFL refused to even reiterate its anti-legalization stance. The fact that you couldn't get the NBA to say, or I'm sorry, not the NBA, the NFL, which has been the staunchest opponent of sports betting, to just trot out their old boilerplate, is interesting to me. I think the NHL is probably the next league. I think Gary Bettman is the next one who will come out in favor of betting on games. I think Major League Baseball may follow after that. They have a new commissioner who is a lot younger.
But betting and baseball have such a bad history.
They do. They do. And, you know, there's a lot of traditionalists that will be very up in arms about that. But I think, well, this much is clear. The NHL is the next domino to fall. And that, in the United States, isn't really a big deal because the NHL is the fourth and maybe even the fifth tier professional sport behind golf. Or NASCAR, for instance. But I think you're going to see the NHL come out next in favor, taking a stance similar to that of Adam Silver. What will need to happen is either the NFL or Major League Baseball will have to do so as well. And you're probably right. You know, I think Major League Baseball will probably come out with a stance which is not in favor of but not opposed. And the NFL is going to have to be the next one. And I think it's probably going to take a new commissioner. Because Goodell, I don't think he can...
Goodell can't do anything right now.
No, he can't. He can't do anything right now.
The good news is the new baseball commissioner recently has come up with a ton of wacky ideas. Some of them are just terrible. But, you know, his ideas should be criticized, but the one thing he shouldn't be criticized for is coming out with new ideas, because Bud Selig had zero good ideas or new ideas. Like, he was just he was totally averse to new ideas.
Well, you know, the All-Star game win, determining the home field advantage, made the All-Star game so much more important.
And Selig was, in charge of implementing replay, so that's true. But
to be clear, I'm not advocating that as good policy for the league.
but it is good replay, to always be reevaluating your product, right, and considering change. And so Manfred seems like a guy, Rob Manfred, the new MLB commissioner, he seems like a guy who, while not necessarily, I have no idea what his views are on sports betting are, he's a guy who is open to change. So that's a step in the right direction. But Aaron, you know, I don't think we're going to be placing bets outside of Nevada anytime soon.
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, things could move quickly. We saw perceptions change very rapidly on gay marriage in this country. Something similar could happen in terms of sports betting. But regardless, it's certainly something we will be tracking. And we'll be watching what happens in New Jersey as that case goes to the Court of Appeals. And we'll see if anything happens federally with McCain's hearing and see how folks are talking about it there. But we're going to move on next to the World Series of Poker. I guess last week we talked about the change in the payout structure for the main event, where they're going to pay, they're guaranteeing to pay the top 1,000 players in the main event this year, so long as the main event draws 5,000 or more people. And it seems very unlikely that they will draw fewer than 5,000 people, as they've been drawing more than 6,000 for, I think, almost a decade now. So we talked about that a little bit, the flattening of the pay scale, and practically they didn't quite come out and say it, but I think they're going to be paying all the members of the November 9 at least $1 million. But they released the schedule in full just this week, and there's some interesting details in it. First of all, we already knew about the Colossus, which was the $565 event, which is a bracelet event. For the first time, you're going to have a bracelet event that costs less than $1,000. And there's also going to be the Lucky Sevens $777 tournament this year. Dan, what do you think about these events that are, you know, a little bit more for the you know, budget-conscious player, an opportunity to play? Should they be bracelet events?
I don't care if they're bracelet events or not, but yes, no, they should. And the reason why they should is because you need to get people out to the World Series of Poker. The World Series of Poker experience is a truly amazing experience. Having experienced it for the first time last year, I obviously didn't play, but it's the world's largest poker convention, and so we need to stop looking at it as, you know, this game played by only professionals who are looking for bracelets, and it's only the best players who are going to win bracelets. It needs to be get as many people out there as possible to experience it, to grow connected to the brand, to be want to come out year after year after year, so that maybe they play in $500 or $700 or $1,000, and maybe they do well in that and try the main event. you know, at some point. At the end of the day, look, counting bracelets is just an arbitrary thing. Poker players are measured by how much money they have in their pockets. Okay, it's not a sport where like we really need to be concerned about ranking the greatest players in terms of how many bracelets they have or any other accomplishments. It is a sport that needs to be sustained by getting more people interested and playing at the World Series of Poker. So with that said, events like the $1,000 Hyper No Limit Hold'em, the $500 Colossus, the $1,500 DraftKings 50-50 event where half the field is going to get paid, the $777 Lucky Sevens, the $1,500 Bounty event, all those things are really, really good ideas. But what I also like is that they are keeping the high buy-in events. You know, they're going to have the main event. They're going to have a $10,000 dealer's choice. That $10,000 dealer's choice, I'm guaranteeing you, is going to mean a whole hell of a lot to the people who are playing in that event.
That's going to be an amazing event.
Because last year was, what, $1,500 dealer's
choice? They're doing two this year, I think. Aren't they? They're doing a $1,500. Yeah, they're doing a $1,500 dealer's choice and a $10,000 dealer's choice.
So anytime you have a $10,000 event outside of the main event, I mean, really, yeah, outside of the main event of the World Series of Poker, a $10,000 event is only going to draw really dedicated players or really rich guys who have a lot of money to blow. Okay, you would never play in a $10,000 dealer's choice, right?
I would love to do it, but yeah, no, I'm not going
to. Okay, if
I could choose any event to play in, it would be that event.
Over the main event? Let's say it's not your money. Let's say someone sponsors you to go play in a World Series of Poker event. Which one would you choose?
For the experience, it would be the $10,000 dealer's choice.
Really?
Because first of all, you play in the main event, you're in a vast sea of 6,500 people,
uh-huh.
And you might recognize one person at your table the entire time. It's you know, it's one game, it's, you know, as exciting as No Limit Hold'em
could
be. So
you want to play with more pros?
I think that experience would be incredible. Okay. I would be sitting down. I guarantee you I'd recognize more than half the people at my table. And
you're
I love
right.
the idea of playing mixed games. Yeah. And I would probably learn a lot more about poker in that event. Do I have a better chance of cashing in a main event field than I do against, you know, a whole bunch of sharks who know how to play these games, who are going to figure out which game I'm bad at and mercilessly call that game every single time? Yeah, no, I don't have a prayer cashed in that event. But if I have $10,000 that you know, someone says, hey, you know, go play what you want to play, I'm playing in that event.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. Aaron, the cash games in the pavilion are going to be insane this year. Insane.
Yeah, no, especially when that Colossus is going on. I mean, I don't even know what they're... this is why I'm going to cover this event, because it's going to be nuts. It is going to be crazy. I mean, they're going to have outside of that, you know, the 1-2 No Limit Hold'em games that they're going to be running like crazy because there's going to be people playing in them like nuts.
I honestly think they're going to need another room.
Yeah, like, I don't know what they're going to do.
Because last year, I mean, the cash games were overflowing into, you know, the main poker area that they have at the Rio for when the World Series isn't going on. That, to me, is the most intriguing part about the World Series of Poker is the cash games going on in the pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's unlike anything I've ever seen at any casino. I mean, I've been to plenty of casinos where, you know, you're on a wait list for a cash game or whatever. But this is like, it's like hundreds of tables and there's a wait list and there's just, people are just going nuts with cash on the table. Like more cash in cash game tables than I've ever seen in my life. And you have 1-2 tables playing right next to guys who are playing 50-100 No Limit, right? You have Men the Master playing Chinese poker for $200 a point next to 10 guys who came in their RVs playing a 1-2 game.
Yeah, it really is something else. And you're right. You know, I think that this tournament schedule is going to get people very excited about going out there. I agree with you wholeheartedly that this is a great way to get people out there who have never been there before. You know, I've been out now, I think, seven times I've been out at the World Series of Poker. And it doesn't get old. Like it is exciting. It is invigorating. It gets you excited about the game. You know, I can't wait to go every year, and I can't wait to be there for the Colossus this year. That is, you know, it's funny. I've been covering these high roller events at the World Series the last few years, you know, $1 million buy-in events. This is the exact opposite, and I am so excited for that. I can't wait to meet some of the people who are going to be playing in this, people who've never been out to Vegas before. You know, this is exactly the type of thing that I think can build interest in the main event, or I'm sorry, build interest in the World Series of Poker. And it's going to be a real shot in the arm. Another big thing that they've announced is that there's going to be some new starting stacks, Dan. There's, you know, excuse me, I'm trying to find the all the details right now. But, you know, most of these tournaments are going to start with 5,000 chips. You know, it's going to be a big difference compared to what it was previously. You know, so, yeah, 5,000 starting chips for the Colossus, 5,000 starting chips for the $777 buy-in, $1,000 buy-ins get 1,000 starting chips, $1,500 buy-in events get 7,500 as opposed to 4,500 in the past. You know, I'm a little surprised, to be honest, because these events run, they schedule them for 3 days and then they end up running four. And now it looks like they're going to give people more chips to start with. Is this a smart move by the World Series of Poker, or is this going to end up, you know, having tournaments run even longer?
You need to give players more play, right? Part of the idea of building a connection to the World Series of Poker brand is, the World Series of Poker structures allow for a lot more poker play than your typical, you know, Foxwoods weekend tournament or whatever. So I think keeping people there longer is a good idea. Now, it might run into some logistical problems, but that's not really that big of a deal. I think keeping people there longer, allowing people to play in the tournaments longer, is going to end up being a net positive for Caesars and for the World Series. Does that make sense?
I agree. I the one thing that I think is, you know, looking at the structure sheets, it looks like the structures are, you know, for instance, instead of starting with a 25-25 level, which I believe, I can't find a structure from 2014. But I believe that there was a 25-25 level, in all events,
yeah, no,
and there's no 25-25 level anymore.
No, it's 100 big blinds for 5,000 starting chips. They're all starting at 25-50, and I'm not even sure if they're eliminating any levels as the tournament goes on. Or...
Well, but here's the thing, though. So I looked at the, you know, the live updates, and the live updates for a $1,500 event, for instance, last year. Level 9 was 300 and 600 with 75 with an ante of 75. This year, level 9 is 300 600 with 75 ante. The difference, I think, is they've added. So what they've done is they've increased the starting stack. They've eliminated this 25-25 level, but they've added in a 250-500 level, which did not exist anymore. It did not exist before. So you've got. You've got that. So I think the chips, I think the blinds are going to be more meaningful earlier, even though you get more chips.
Mm-hmm.
Because that 25-25 level, I mean, to be honest, if you started with 4,500 chips, they're trumping the 66% increase in chips. But if you started with 4,500 chips and the big blind was 25, you had 180 big blinds. Now you only have 100 big blinds. So I think you have a smaller stack to begin with, but that addition in level 8 brings everything else in line. So later on, at the end of day 1, the chip stacks will be deeper, and for the rest of the tournament they'll be deeper. But I think what that does is it makes the blinds a little bit more meaningful. And also, they still have late registration for 6 levels, but the end of level 6 Actually, it makes late registration a little bit less of a big deal, because you're losing fewer chips in relation to your chip stack. Even though, well, maybe you're losing more. I don't know. I think in the end, it's a wash, but it is giving people more chip stacks. Once you get to that eighth level, you'll have more chips. I don't think you'll have more in the early levels.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think it's a good marketing ploy, but I don't think that it makes a big difference. I think people are going to be shorter stacked to begin with, which makes late registration actually harder, which I agree with. I would rather see people who register late be penalized more.
Right.
Because if you register late at the end of level 6, it's level 7, you're going to have 12 big blinds.
Right.
Whereas previously, I think, well, you would have had about the same. You would have had 15 if you registered at the end of level 6 last year. So it makes it harder for people to register really late, and I want to see people there right from the beginning.
Yeah, you know, they're going to tinker with these changes over the years. They're going to review, you know, what they've done. But I think all of this is overall, they're going in the positive direction with the World Series. The idea that you need to get a lot more low buy-in people out there to experience firsthand the World Series of Poker, because you do have to experience it firsthand. The fact of the matter is the TV coverage, the marketing, it's not what it used to be where, like, you know, you're just getting thousands of people to come out there because they're seeing it on TV and it's a really popular thing to do right now. Like, you got to get people out there because they're getting a great deal and they're gonna have the chance to do this. And then once they do it, then they'll come back. Because, you know, people could play the main event. They might win their satellite or whatever, and they'll spend $10,000 because, you know, they want to do it. It's a bucket list item. But, you know, if they don't cash, tough to come back. But with these types of events, players can literally come every single year.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's what the Daily Deep Stacks, tried to capitalize on. And this is a way for that Daily Deep Stack crowd, people who, you know, there are people who go and play, they'll go stay in Vegas for 4 or 5 days, and they'll play in 3 or 4 different Daily Deep Stack events. Well, this is another opportunity to go and do something similar for about the same price, but to play in a World Series of Poker bracelet event, the Colossus, which is going to be the biggest poker tournament ever. Like, yeah, there's no doubt about this. They're going to have more than 10,000 entries in this event. Now, it's over there's 2 starting days, and people can enter as many as 4 times. There will be people who do that. There will be a lot of people who do that. But I think they're going to be overwhelmed by people who are going in, taking 1, maybe 2 shots.
The World Series is – they need to do remember that poker tournament we saw in Florida that had, like, 8 starting days?
Yeah.
They need to do one of those.
There was like they had 8 days, and then they had 2 or 3 flights every day. So they were up to like starting day 1 T. Like, it was ridiculous.
So the really interesting thing about this World Series schedule is we're going to start seeing all the other casinos coming out with their competing poker schedules. We're going to see the WPT schedule, the Aria schedule, the Bellagio, the Wynn, the Venetian. When exactly did they start doing, the other casinos start doing that, where they realized that, hey, there's a bunch of poker players out here in Vegas, we should start offering tournaments that coincide with the World Series of Poker?
Well, I mean, you know, I think it was when the World Series started getting really big.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, probably 2007, 2008, the Venetian said, hey, we should do our deep stack events. And let's be clear, like, this is the World Series of Poker is really responding to that as well. Like, you know, they're losing people who are going to, and that's what the Daily Deep Stacks was for sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about that. They said, you know, well, we've got all these people who are in town, and they're not playing at the World Series of Poker. They're going to play at the Venetian at the Deep Stacks event.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the Deep Stacks extravaganza? Well, like, why are we not doing that? So that's clear. That's why they're doing that. And that's why this Colossus is here. The Colossus is a brilliant idea. I told, actually, I guess this was 2 or 3 years ago, the World Series of Poker held its 1,000th bracelet event in, like, 2011, 2012. I don't remember. And it was prior to when that year started, I reached out to Nolan Dalla and I said, Nolan, the World Series of Poker really should make the 1,000th event the biggest event in poker history. You should be trying to draw 10,000 people to that event. And he said it was a smart idea, but it never really went anywhere.
What was the 1,000th event? Did they
do
anything
remember.
Special?
I don't know. They didn't. They didn't mark it with anything special at all. But, you know, that should have been my contention was you do a $1,000 event. At the time, they hadn't done anything less than $1,000. But I thought they should do a $1,000 event with three starting days, just like you do the main event. So you do Friday, Saturday, Sunday starting days, and then converge everybody together on day two, and you could get 10,000 people to play in that, no problem. Mm-hmm. Especially if you have attached some sort of guarantee to it, or, you know, they learned with these monster stacks. It's funny, you know, they have all these – people might view them as gimmicks. I think they're really smart marketing ideas. But the reality is it's going to lower attendance in all these other events. If you're going to play in an event, you should be playing the monster to stack. You should be playing in the millionaire maker. You should be playing in the colossus if you're not a pro. You know, if you're going to go play in some random $1,500 no limit hold'em event, that thing is going to be stacked with a much higher percentage of pros than those other events, which are going to draw people in by the masses. Now you have to make whatever works with your schedule work. So if you have to go play in one of those, then that's what you have to do. But I don't know. I can't wait to see what happens this year. I'm looking forward to it. And Dan's right. If you have not been to the World Series of Poker and you play poker and you enjoy it, even if you're, you know, someone who plays 3-4 times a year, get out there and play. It's
Disney World for poker.
It absolutely is.
Having experienced way too much Disney World in my life, I can attest to that. But Vegas is Disney World for adults too. Like it makes perfect sense. You know, the Rio is kind of just the perfect place for the World Series too. Like I went around to a few different casinos and they're all very nice, but the Rio just, it has that carnival feel, right? And the World Series of Poker is a carnival. It's a poker carnival. So
I never thought of that before, but I like that. I like it. And you know, I mean, the location is nice because you're not on the strip.
Got the extended stay.
That's all we care about. We got our lodging figured out. But let's move from the World Series of Poker to perhaps even a bigger tournament. Dan, last night you played on PokerStars Home Games. You played a tournament on there. Can you tell us a little bit about how that went, what the experience was like, and you know what it made you think about in terms of you know, online poker in the USA and how you can make things work?
Sure. Yeah. So basically, the way this worked is a friend of a friend of mine started this Facebook group for PokerStars Home Games. And so the way it works is, you know, on PokerStars has this home game feature where not just for players in the U.S., but for anybody, you can play in these private clubs, in these private tournaments within the clubs with play chips. And, you know, the idea behind it is, okay, you settle up the money afterwards with your friends or no money at all. So we sent each other money on Venmo, which is like an app for your phone where you can transact money between checking accounts. And we played a poker tournament online. So it was a 10-man sit and go, and it lasted an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it was a lot of fun. And I think it's a really cool way for U.S. players to continue to play online poker, or to continue to play poker in general, because Aaron, as you are well aware, you know, now that we don't really have online poker, it's very difficult to keep playing poker. You can't get your friends together or your poker buddies together very often. People have schedules, you know, having a home poker game, you're going to want to do that for at least 5-6 hours. You know, hands take a lot longer. When you play an online poker game, when you play a PokerStars home game, we played a 10-man sit and go in 2 hours. And when five people busted, they started another one. And there was even a third one after that. And all of that was accomplished within the span of what one home poker game would have taken time-wise. Nobody had to leave their house. All the money was taken care of through Venmo. So it's a great idea. And I encourage everyone to look into doing that to keep their home poker games alive. I still, and I'm sure you do too, I still love the camaraderie of getting together to play a poker game. But this is really a great way to, you know, continue playing poker you know, when you can. And that's, for me, the loss of online poker is just, has always been the worst for me in that, like, I loved the ability to, whenever I was bored, go sit down on the computer and play online poker. This, still, you still need a guy to get people together, but, like, you know, just, you need to get, if you find two friends and say, hey, you guys just want to play a quick three-man sit and go, that's easily, you can easily accomplish that through PokerStars home games.
Yeah, to be clear, PokerStars home games does not, you know, deal with any of the money. They don't really endorse its use for to circumvent gambling law.
But it's not. It's not illegal gambling if you think about it. There's no rake. We're just transacting money between friends.
Yeah, it depends on the state laws. You know, within your own state, within your jurisdiction.
Sure. But it's no more legal or illegal than having a
I think if you were playing with people outside of Massachusetts, it would be illegal. Because you're talking about, then you're talking about interstate gambling.
Let's erase this part of the podcast, because everybody I played with, I think, was in Michigan. So.
But, you know, like I said, you need to be aware of what the laws are within your own state and what you're comfortable with in terms of risk. I don't know that anyone's going to be knocking down your doors if you're playing a $20 tournament here and there, you know, in a home game atmosphere online. But you're right, Dan. We've played, you know, my group of friends has played PokerStars home games in the past. You know, it was a lot of fun. We actually set it up so that we had we set up like a whatever you call it, like an online like video conference call.
Oh yeah.
So we were all like, so you could see everybody like while we were playing, which was kind of funny because sometimes people would forget. And you know, like there's all this other stuff that's going on in the background at people's houses and stuff like that. But you're right
about
it.
Someone picks up aces. Ooh.
You know, when I was in my 20s and I first started playing with this group, six or seven of us lived within, you know, 1 or 2 square mile radius. And we used to walk to each other's houses and we'd gather to play. And then we'd stumble home at like 2 in the morning, you know. Now we're all married, we all have kids, and we kind of spread out all around Metro Boston. And, you know, some of these guys will drive 45 minutes or an hour to get to a game. And then they got to drive 45 minutes or an hour at the end. And, you know, we haven't done it in a while, but you know, hearing you talk about it this morning kind of spurred me to think, yeah, we should do this again. It was a lot of fun. And it's a way for us to, you know, like we're lucky to get together once a month now. It used to be once a week. So, you know, we'll have to give it another shot, but it's definitely a viable option, for those of you who are looking for a way to gather and play with friends. And, you know, there's the nice thing is you've got the whole chat function, so you can, you know, still give each other a hard time, you know, just like you always would. You know, for instance, when we played in our home game on PokerStars a few years ago, I'll never forget, Jazz timed out 4 or 5 times because he, you know, wasn't paying attention and his hand was folded. And, you know, we just all started joking. We said, we need this function when we get together and play, you know, at someone's house, because Jazz is the guy that can't make a decision. You know, he's constantly fiddling with his phone, or, you know, it's his turn to deal, and right before the hand ends, when he's supposed to deal, he saunters off to the bathroom and goes to the bathroom, and it's like, God, and he's not doing it to be malicious. He's just clueless.
Online poker is so superior in that in so many ways.
Yeah. But again, you know, you miss out on the you know, the opportunity to.
Yeah,
to socialize in person.
If I could have back the home games with my high school friends that we played all the time, you know, throughout high school, if I had to choose between that or online poker, I would totally take my home games again. And the fact is that my high school friends are, and we're all spread all across the East Coast now, so it's not possible. So in that regard, I would take the online poker, but yeah, that, you can't beat that, you know, a live home poker game with friends. You order food. Everybody's having a good time. So wholesome. God, I miss those days. But PokerStars home games, it's sort of a way that you can rekindle that magic.
I just remembered that, you know, this conversation has prompted me to remember that about 4 years ago, this is when that we played our home game, and I wrote a column about it. You can find it on CasinoCityTimes.com.
4 years ago?
Yeah, it was January 21st, 2011.
So before Black Friday.
Yeah, it was.
You were the only person using that before Black Friday.
They had just launched, and they had just launched the home games feature.
They must have known it was coming.
And you know, most of the guys that I was playing with didn't have. They had accounts at PokerStars, but they didn't have any money because you know my friends have kind of had given up playing online.
Yeah.
For money a while ago. So, but this was an option for us to still play, and we our game had been snowed out, is what happened. So we all decided to just play. PokerStars home games. But I wrote a column about it. You can find it on CasinoCityTimes.com. Look for Aaron Todd under the Gaming Gurus and just do a search for Your Mom is a Game of Skill. I was talking about the fact that, you know, there was a lot of good chat during the game and, you know, the same banter that we'd have at a regular home game when we all got together. Some of the guys were debating about whether what we were doing was legal. In the chat box.
Really?
And one of the guys wrote, you know, we're not gambling. We're playing a game of skill. And for no reasons, another player, and I don't even know what this means or why it's funny, but another guy just immediately typed into the chat, your mom is a game of skill.
I don't even know what that means.
All right.
Funny.
But yeah, so it's a great alternative. And you know, it's what I think is great about it is it gives people an opportunity to set up leagues where you can play for, you know, over a course of a number of weeks. And I know a lot of people who set up leagues on PokerStars home games that, you know, award either a big cash prize at the end or they're a satellite to a World Series event or some other live event. So it's a great alternative for those out there that are looking to play. And if you're able to play online for real money, then God bless, you can do that too. Or if you want to kind of circumvent things, and we're not endorsing this, but again, find out what all the laws are in your jurisdiction. But it is a way to play poker with folks online that you may not be able to get together with in person.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to move on to the end of our show, which is, of course, our best bets. I wasn't able to. I had six adults. And five children in my house during the Super Bowl. So I was unable to actually pay close attention for quite a while as we had two almost four-year-olds running around like crazy. And then a six-year-old and two eight-year-olds it was just chaos. So I wasn't able to pay close attention to my prop bets. I am pretty darn sure that I was a loser this year for the first time in a few years. Jimmy Devlin did not come through for me in the second half for the Patriots. I wasn't clear as to what happened with the national anthem. I think it was just about right on the number based on, you know, my timing. So I don't know how that bet resolved itself.
I was all over Shane Vereen. Remember that?
Yes.
He had 11 catches. He didn't score a touchdown, though. I had that, and he did not score a touchdown. But I just had a pretty good feeling that Vereen was going to be a heavy part of that offense, more so than Blunt, and he was.
I'm still the MVP vote always. I don't like the fact that when there's not a clear winner, it's just the default is the quarterback for the winning team. Because Brady darn near lost in that game.
Are you kidding me?
In the fourth quarter, he was incredible. But they never should have been in a position where the game was out of reach. They should have been winning the whole game. He threw two terrible interceptions,
okay,
including one.
The first one was terrible. The second one was not terrible. The second one was a great, great play that maybe three linebackers in the league could have made. That it was a tremendous play. The first one was one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen, for sure. But
he threw a lot of balls that before the fourth quarter, though, that were fluttering around. It was like they had too much air in the ball and he didn't know what to do with it. I'm not even joking. Like, he had some really bad looking throws. Now obviously he still won them the game, there's no doubt about that.
That was his best Super Bowl performance ever. Like, I actually think it was his best playoff performance either, other than maybe the Ravens game this year. I thought he was remarkable, other than that first interception, which was I was a head scratcher for sure. So I was fine with him being the MVP. Who else would have been the MVP?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know that there was a clear winner.
I mean, Butler, from like a win probability added standpoint, Butler's interception was, you know, the most valuable play.
Well, that's the thing.
Was he the most valuable player?
imagine you're in the World Series, and it's a 7-game series, and you've got a guy that hits 150 for the whole series, but you're down by 3 in the bottom of the 9th, and he hits a walk-off grand slam.
Uh-huh.
Does he get the MVP? He might.
Well, so from that standpoint, he shifts your probability of winning the World Series so dramatically that that one single home run is incredibly valuable. But I don't know. It's, I guess, how you want to look at it. I view it as more of the guy who consistently added the most value over the course of the series or over the course of the game, not the guy who just, you know, hit the jackpot one time at the end of the game.
Well, there's no doubt that Madison Bumgarner was the MVP of the World Series.
Exactly.
I don't think we can argue about that
he
one.
He did both, right? He was consistently amazing throughout the series and then dominated throughout the Game 7.
Right.
When his arm almost fell off. But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's competing philosophies, but depending which argument you want to go, if you want to go with the guy who made the most valuable impact on one play, it was Butler. But the guy who made the most impact throughout the game, besides Brady, maybe Edelman?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Someone needs to tell that guy to take a break.
Edelman?
He's going to end up with scrambled eggs for brains.
He's Wes Welker part two.
I'm telling you, it is. See, it's so hard because I sit there and I watch these games with my kid, and he loves those guys. And I think – I don't blame him. I mean, there's a lot to watch and be like, wow, that's incredible. He wants to play football so bad, and I'm just like, no, because you want to be exactly like Julian Edelman, and I am not putting my 8-year-old in a situation where he's going to end up with like 1,000 concussions. And
yeah, it's
tough. And you know, it's we still have this thing where the broadcasters, you know, they praise that sort of play. They praise them for, you know, getting up and staying on the field, and I understand it. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, they really needed him in that game, and if he's not there, then that really hurts the Patriots offense. But at the same time, like, the risk to your own health and safety and like your future is just tough.
That's football is what it is, right?
Like, for guys that are in the NFL, I completely get it. Like, this is your life, right? This is your chosen profession, and I'm not going to fault a guy for doing that because they're trying to win a Super Bowl. This is, like, the ultimate achievement in your professional career. But then you extend that down to, like, high school and, like, Pop Warner football, and, you know, if you don't think that that impacts the way kids think about the game, then you're deluding yourself, right? I mean, and you got kids taking those risks for games that are essentially meaningless. They might mean a lot to the kid at the time. I'm not going to diminish that because I remember being in youth sports and I wanted to win.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I don't want to delve into this discussion too much, but there is a difference. Even if everybody's giving the same maximum effort, there's a difference between Edelman running into a linebacker than is an 8-year-old running into another 8-year-old. You know, the type of head trauma is not going to be the same. So with that said, let's just call a spade and say that football is incredibly dangerous, and there's really
and
no
Americans
other way to play
it. And
just,
Americans
it,
love it.
It just is what it is.
Right.
If you're not playing football dangerously, then it's just not that great of a game. So, you know, that I probably wouldn't let my kids play either, but I still love football.
Well, we will hold off on any football discussion until the fall when our best bets will once again turn into our NFL picks.
Vin might want to pick the Canadian Football League games because he's been scouting them. So
I used to watch the CFL back growing up. You got to love a 110-yard field, and you know, every time you can score on a rouge, you can't beat it. But let's move on to our best bets. Dan, what have you got on slate for this week?
Well, I'm just going Bet 365 cut out on me. I was just going to go NBA spreads.
I can go first if yours is.
I got them right here.
All right.
So, it moved a little bit. I'm going to be taking the Charlotte Hornets at home. They are 1.5-point dogs against the Wizards. Charlotte's been playing really well of late. They actually have the top defense in the NBA. And I think they're starting to gel at the right time. So I'm going with Charlotte at plus 1.5. Then I'm going to go with the Clippers on the road. They are at Cleveland, who has been playing really well, but the Clippers are getting 4.5 points. I think the Clippers are, you know, I think they're really good. I think this is going to be a close game. Cavs might pull it out, but I'll go Clippers plus 4.5. And then I am going to go, I'm going to go Sacramento Kings at home. They're 3-point dogs against the Mavericks. Mavericks blew they were up 21-4 last night against the Golden State Warriors, and the Warriors ended up coming back to blow them out. Mavericks are just really struggling right now to find cohesion on the floor. At times they look unbeatable, and then other times they just look stagnant. So I'm going to go with the Kings, who haven't even been playing well, but I'm going to go with them at plus 3. So 3 dogs for me, 2 home dogs in the NBA tonight.
All right. Well, you know, Dallas may not be playing well because their owner is way too focused on making business deals on Shark Tank. But let's go. Let's go to the NHL for my best bets. I'll be honest, I've watched almost zero NHL games over the last month or so. And I haven't been paying close tabs on it. So these guesses my picks are guesses to be sure. But I like scoring, so I'm going to pick 3 overs. I'm going to pick Washington at Ottawa. The lines, the over-under set at 5.5. I'm going to take the over for even money. Detroit at Colorado, the over again set at 5.5. I'm going to take the over at plus 115. And then, of course, we have the Grand Salami. The line is set at 49.5 goals. I'm going to take the over there as well. If we get a lot of scoring in those two games, that's going to bode well for me in the Grand Salami as well. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Casino City Gang. We'll have Vin back with us next week. He may fill us in a little bit on what happened in London while he was away. And we'll have anything else that happens that's interesting in the world of gambling to discuss as well. Dan, anything to add as we close things down?
I'm just sad that no more football. But hey, pitchers and catchers report in about 2 weeks. I will be reporting in about 3 weeks. I'm jaunting down to Clearwater for a quick weekend at the end of the month. I'm actually not going to be watching any spring training baseball, but I still go to the scene of the crime every year just to play golf and eat at the familiar restaurants that my dad and I have come to love. This will be our, I think, 10th time going together.
Excellent. I'm a little jealous. I will be sitting here, probably still buried in snow. We'll see how much snow we get over the next week.
If we're still buried in snow by February 28th, that's a problem. I already said
it's not going to melt. You think the snow's going to be melted by February 28th?
All you need is one 50-degree day, and in New England, that it could happen.
I have an iceberg in front of my house. I'm not joking. The snowbanks are 10 feet high.
I know.
I am not exaggerating.
I know. It's terrible.
Like up to my basketball hoop.
But I understand that you probably have big snowbanks, but my road literally looks like a war zone. I mean, it's literally people fighting for parking spots. It's like Game of Thrones. People will just, when they go to work, they'll find any piece of material that they can find, some kind of bulky material, so that when they leave their spot, they put it in the parking spot so that nobody can park there.
Oh, you got to love the old Southie rules. They've gone outside of Southie. They've branched out. I lived in Cambridge. They did the same thing.
I'm actually in favor of this because I do feel like if you shovel out your spot, you should claim ownership of that spot. It shouldn't be fair that just because you get home later than other people, that other people should be able to poach your spot. But up and down the streets in my neighborhood are just cars that are covered with snow, not from even the last snowstorm, but the last snowstorm and the snowstorm before that. And all that snow is now turned into, like, ice.
They're never getting out.
No, these are just people who have cars who don't use them. They probably, you know, have cars for whatever reason, but take the T to work or whatever.
Well, I mean, if you take your car once a week to the grocery store and you figure, okay, well, I don't need to take it this week, I'm not going to clean the car out, then, yeah.
No, but they're going to – but at this point, no amount of manual labor will be able to clear that car. They're going to be waiting for April for all the snow to melt. And by that point, I bet you there's going to be something wrong with their engines. Anyway, that's my parting shot at people who don't dig their cars out of the snow. I did it 3 times in the last week.
Yeah, yeah, and we're going to be doing it again soon. But tune in next week. We'll be sure to continue to bitch and complain about the snow, I'm sure. Thanks for joining us. Join us each and every week at the Casino City Gang Podcast. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com for live streaming. You can also catch archives of the show at casinocitytimes.com or online.casinocity.com. And hey, while you're there, sign up for our email newsletters. You'll get all the latest on the gambling world delivered right to your inbox. The Casino City Times newsletter comes out overnight on Mondays, and you'll get it on Tuesday morning. It gives you the latest news on the land-based industry, as well as some online news that we think is interesting. And then the online Casino City Times newsletter comes out on Thursday nights, overnight on Friday. You'll get that for all the latest bonuses and information on the online gambling world. Thanks for joining us, and join us again next week for the Casino City Gang. The music for the Casino City Gang podcast is provided by the PodSafe Music Network. Please be sure to make sure gambling is legal in your jurisdiction. The podcast does not endorse any illegal gambling.